episode 121 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, a Latinx show where I interview the people and discuss the moments that are shaping our American and Latino pop culture. Well, it's been an interesting week in pop culture, to say the least. 90210 is back. I'm not sure if you guys have had a chance to see the show. Well, I got some thoughts. But for context, I need you to know that I religiously used to watch 90210 when I was a teenager. It's like, that was what I would do. What was it? Monday night? Or I feel like they changed it like between summers. Some seems to be like on Wednesday or something like that. And I wanted to be Jason Priestley. I wasn't that much of a Luke Perry fan, but Jason Priestley, he's the guy that I envision myself kind of being like. So when I heard that they were returning after a 30-year TV reunion, I was all in. All in. Then I saw the first episode. And it really pains me to say, I'm not sure if it was the right decision. And granted, it's been only one episode. But if you haven't seen it, look, the show is a fictionalized, behind-the-scenes look at how the real-life 90210 actors contemplate whether reuniting for a reboot 30 years later is a good idea. And I mean, I don't want to throw any puns, but maybe it wasn't such a good idea. It's definitely an acquired taste. The concept is very similar to what Charlie Kaufman does or what Seth Rogen came up with for his surrealist film, This Is the End. That movie was clever. It was on the money. And maybe because it was movies and it was comedy, a black comedy at that, it worked well. But this 90210 iteration, it's heady, but that's not the problem. The problem is that it was a little too real for me, and it broke the fantasy of all my 90s memories. This is not the 90210 you guys remember. It's angry, it's cynical, and at times, it's a sad, cringeworthy look at these cherished, iconic characters, just falling from grace. So why did I think I would like this? Truthfully, it was never about us, the fans. It was giving themselves a reason to not feel cheap about a reunion that they knew would be highly anticipated. When I talk about they, I'm talking about the cast. They're all executive producers on the show. But, you know, it's not the context I wanted to see. I wanted to see an interesting follow-up to the characters 30 years later, married, fighting through adult challenges, but always there for each other, where the friendship was always the nexus of the show. And so you do that for six episodes, and I'll ask for another six on the spot, right there and then. But this is what they had in store for us, this surrealistic, exaggerated, heightened version, meta show about themselves that seems more experimental, like late night on Showtime, even HBO, but I don't think it works on Fox broadcast in the same network that we remember the old show. And look, at the end of the day, the stone cold truth for me is that even though I don't feel that great about this episode, seeing them together in any storyline is enough for me. And I'm one to immediately raise my hand and say, my nostalgia overrides all disappointment, and I'm more than grateful to see these guys together than not. But anyways, nevertheless, on this episode, I'm going to be talking to the founder of the New York Latino Film Festival, Calixto Chinchilla, about what the festival has in store for moviegoers this year. I mean, we discussed whether the festival should change its name to the New York Latinx Film Festival, since it's such a champion for Latinx voices. Plus, Calixto gives me recommendations at the must-see movies you need to see at the festival this year. Then, Mike Sargent and I give you our first reaction of the live-action version of Dora the Explorer from Paramount Pictures. It's an important movie for Latinx folks that are championing their voices be represented on the big screen. Is it the next Black Panther or Crazy Rich Asians for Hispanics? Well, listen to the review and you'll be the judge. But before we get into it, it's time I give you my weekly pop culture news recap in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie news of the week. Pedro Almodóvar's new film, Pain and Glory, will screen at the 2019 New York Film Festival. Dora and the Lost City of Gold is tracking for a $15 million to $19 million debut. Guillermo del Toro receives a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Wesley Snipes has joined Eddie Murphy's Coming to America sequel. And Danny Trejo has joined the cast of the new sci-fi action series, Paragon. In TV news, Univision is ready to premiere the first ever gay primetime series called El Corazón Nunca Se Equivoca on August 13th. Jimmy Smits returns to TV on NBC's new legal drama, Bluff City Law. The Game of Thrones creators ink a $200 million multi-year deal with Netflix. Will ABC's Grand Hotel have a season 2? And Mario Lopez might get fired as host of Access Hollywood before he begins over controversial remarks about transgenders. Switching over to music, J Balvin, Bad Bunny, Ozuna are set to perform at the Texas Euphoria Music Series. The Jonas Brothers kicked off their Happiness Begins tour in Miami. Legendary songwriter and producer Rudy Perez is interested in writing songs for Broadway. And Los Tigres del Norte announced a Netflix original documentary. And in tech and social media news, Disney will bundle Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus for just $13 per month. iHeartMedia will start airing its own podcast on over 200 of its radio stations every Sunday. Twitch has released its own broadcasting software, and Apple revealed its new Apple Card to key influencers. Joining me now is Calixto Chinchilla. He is the founder and the executive director of the New York Latino Film Festival, which this year is celebrating its 20 years since its founding. Calixto, I'm glad to have you on the show, man.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a special year for you, right?
Yeah, but it's funny because other people have recognized it, but I haven't in my head.
But it's like it's the 2-0. It's two decades. Why hasn't it hit you?
Because I'm still looking at it as the 16th edition. So, you know, it did take us, I guess, the first 2 years, it did take us 2 years to mount the first festival. So the organization was already announced, you know, prior, like in 1998. So I don't know. I try not to think about it, but I'm glad everyone else has. So I appreciate it.
It gives it a sense of excitement this year.
Yeah.
They're getting bigger than ever. What can ticket buyers expect this year from the New York Latino Film Festival in its 16th edition?
Well, I mean, we have our Futuro Digital Conference, which we launched in our comeback. And really it was about, I hate using our comeback, but in that period when we returned was really to have an event that not only impacted, you know, cinematic storytellers, but just digital content creators and creators across the board, and do it in a way where it's not just suits talking to, you know, us or millennials or content creators, but really kind of like that peer-to-peer kind of conversation. And it seems to be, you know, it's grown quickly. It's done what it's set to do. So it's really, we've had so many people build from it and grow from it. And I think it's just a different kind of audience, which is what we wanted to do from the outset when it came time to Futuro. So, you know, there's that. We're honoring John Singleton. So we have an outdoor free park screening. That we're kind of honoring John, and his daughter's going to be there to present. And people don't know this, but John used to come to the festival on the low.
Oh, really?
Talk to the filmmakers. Yeah, he would talk. He had a couple of conversations, like just town halls to filmmakers on the low. And he was like that guy that would, you know, sit in the back of the theater and just look at films or talk to people. And just, he was everything that people said he was, you know, he is. You know what I mean? And, you know, so it was a real loss, but he was really just a giver of information. And but not many people really know that. But yeah, he's attended a couple of times.
What is the theme of the New York Latino Film Festival this year? I know that you guys have a slogan called This Is Me. What does that mean?
We really don't go on themes versus, and people think we do, but we really don't. But This Is Me was really when it came time to think about messaging and you know, it was really about diversity and really what does diversity look like to us and really the ethics of the festival. Since the inception of the festival, you know, we talked about the Afro-Latino experience, we talked about the LGBTQ experience, we talked about you know, the US Latino experience versus the international experience. So we've always been that festival that kind of really pushed the conversation. And I think even when we first started, people questioned what we were doing, but now you're having.
Why was that?
I don't know. I think because these conversations didn't quite exist then. So now you're hearing the words Afro-Latino. I think now you're seeing more Latino festivals kind of being open to LGBTQ content. And for us, we did that from the start. I think it's just, I guess, that generational shift.
Right.
But just now people are kind of just talking about it. And for us, that's how we always were back then. And sometimes I would hear it, he's showing too much Moreno stuff, or he's showing too much this, or they're doing that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And then, a lot of these filmmakers would be insecure because I remember there would be gay filmmakers that only played the gay circuit, right?
Right.
Because that's where they would be accepted. And then I remember there was some surprise, like even Rose Troach, who's like a big Boricua lesbian filmmaker. I remember we showed one of her works and she was like, this is the first Latino festival that accepted me for me.
That's insane.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you would have black filmmakers that were Afro Latinos that were like, I grew up Latino. I just never really felt, I could play here. This movie would work here. And I was like, no, you belong here. And so I think it's that. And also, if you look at that, that's how we actually had to motivate the audiences, because then you had that same ethics that you had in, with the films, you had to make sure that the audience felt like they were a part of it too.
How does the New York Latino Film Festival, how have you guys grown with the word Latinx? Has there ever been any pressures to name the film festival the New York Latinx Film Festival? For those, the ones that are very egregious about making sure that Latinos and Latinas aren't used anymore.
No, not really. I mean, we're having conversation with you about it to kind of, to be open. We are, to kind of have that kind of conversation. I think you have Latinos that don't like it and some that do. And some that, question it.
But do you feel any pressure at any moment that because you maintain the Latino as opposed to the Latinx to kind of reflect more of Hispanics today, you don't feel like you need to change it? Why?
Not yet. Because I don't think the general consensus has switched to it. I think corporate reacted to it quick just to be safe. But I don't think if you ask some folks in corporate, they're like, oh, we just, some people don't like it themselves.
Right.
I think it's just, it hasn't been fully accepted yet. I think we're still, as a culture, still divided on it.
What does Latinx mean to you, Calixto?
I mean, I'm not big on the term myself. I think it's like we don't need another bucket. I think let people identify themselves the way they want to be identified. And that's how I always do it. It's not like there's a gay X, it's like there's a black X.
Right.
So why are we creating another bundle for ourselves? That's a personal opinion. At this point, that's just my opinion. I identify you the way you want to identify, and that's it. I'm not going to blanket you. I'm not going to say this is X and you're the X. I think there's a lot of connotations when you see X. X is wrong. X is not right. I don't really like that. And again, I just want to express it. My opinion, but,
My opinion about Latinx is more about being U.S. Hispanic than Latin American. It's the first association I have when I hear the word. I hear more U.S. Hispanic, Latinx, interchangeable. Then I obviously look at it as what happens when you're transgender. How do you call yourself if it's not an O or an A?
Exactly.
So you need the X for identification purposes, right?
But if you're transgender, you want to be identified for the gender that you are.
Correct.
And so, there's a transgender talent that we're dealing with now, and they want to be identified as them. And then some want to be identified as, the woman or the man that they are.
And correct.
So I think, again, just to my point, I just think to bundle it, I don't want to, I'm not sure that's the right way of thinking. I get the thought. I'm not sure that's what we should be doing. I think, you know, let's, you know, I'm going to call you as you want to be called. And if you want to be called them, then that's neither X or Y. That's them.
Right. Interestingly, though, is that even though that Latinx isn't necessarily the term that's used for the film festival as a whole, you guys do inhibit a lot of the filters of what Latinx is in the movies that you premiere, in the voices, in the creative voices that you have as directors, actors, etc. How has the evolution of the New York Latino Film Festival gone through for the last 20 years? Is it the same? Have you seen the creative voices change throughout the decades? Where are we now compared to where we were when the Latino Film Festival just started?
Oh, I mean, it's evolved as far as the voice is concerned. How it our industry, the industry response is getting better, but we're still at that standstill to a certain extent. Certain things remain the same and some have changed. I think just seeing, obviously, this generation is viewing the culture from a different lens, right? Mm-hmm. We have social media. Now there's this, there's a greater want and understanding to the multicultural experience of being Latino, right? And I think that that's being reflected with the stories that you see come out of that, you know? And music, I always take a cue from music.
From hip hop.
You know, you hear from hip hop, you hear from reggaeton, you see Bad Bunny. Once you see these collabos happening and you're seeing other cultures kind of come into it and you see like a Cardi B, like who would have thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
then you're realizing, okay, the culture is being consumed differently and the children that are being, you know, that the face of being Latino is changing. And I think the stories that come with that obviously have changed. And again, these kids are looking at it from a different lens. And I think so. I think that all of that combination, you're seeing a change in the content. What you aren't seeing is a change in executive representation.
That's
what you
the
aren't
problem.
Seeing is the investment. Yeah. What you aren't seeing is us in those positions to green light. So yeah, you'll see a Latino executive here or there, whatever. But how many people of color really have can really move the needle? Particularly Latinos, I'll say. And that seems to be the same issue. Like, that hasn't really changed, unfortunately.
Let me ask you something about the film festival business as its own. You're not the only Latino film festival in the country. There are many of them throughout many cities, mainly major cities and some not. But how do you feel the film festivals are working out in our country? Are any of them really making any progress? What needs to happen for the film festivals throughout the country to really sort of rally up and kind of get that Toronto International Film Festival sort of cachet?
I mean, it's tough because the audiences from city to city are different and the demos obviously are different. So I think the kind of content they can get will change, right? And the audiences that they serve, some stuff, you know, a film festival in Texas will play well, and I know I can't, it doesn't work for me, and vice versa. So I think it's a little bit of that, and then I think I think a lot of it is just the cities and the audiences. Not every city, you know, can play films well, you know, the same. So I think that might be the issue.
Is part of your mission statement to take movies that are premiering for the very first time to give these voices a platform? Is it ultimately to put those movies in the mainstream, or does the shelf life end there?
No, I mean, I want to get an acquisition deal just like anyone else does. I think we thrive on that. I think we thrive on, you know, breaking a film through and hopefully getting a deal. And we've seen that happen. And I think for us, I think that what's great about what we've been able to do is that, you know, we really don't play by any rules. If you look at our programming, you know, we play what kind of works for us, but we don't have any So I don't have to, there's every kind of Latino in New York City.
Right.
So unlike a city like Texas or LA or what have you, I can play whatever, you know, whatever we feel like works. And, you know, there's some films that are distinctively New York Latino Film Festival films. You could, that I think some people could tell you, but no, I kind of relish on breaking in a film and you know, and hopefully seeing it get an acquisition deal. I mean, last year, all of our winners got a deal.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And the year before that, you know, all of our short films, but probably for the past 5 years, even after the hiatus, before the hiatus, we got a deal. So I think that that's how you build that recognition when you become a place where people are like, okay, this is a pipeline. You know, this is a festival that can really build audiences. This is a festival where, you know, studios are paying attention to. And so for me, from day one, we've always strived to be that festival that people look to, because you got to remember, there wasn't a Tribeca before we came out. When we came out, like, the only thing that I looked at was a Sundance. And yeah, I kind of wanted to emulate a Sundance, I think artistically. But beyond that, we had to be our own. But that studio industry cred, you know, we fought for, you know. And so, you know, since day one, when we premiered, you know, Girl Fight, to take that as a New York premiere, I could have played the New York Film Festival easily. That was the hottest film back then. And then for Sony to trust a nobody festival with the biggest film that they had, with the biggest acquisition that they had, that put us on the map.
Right.
That one move right there gave me, you know, gave the festival credibility. And then you take that moment and then you got to multiply it. Now you got to, you know, that has to happen the second year, then the third year, whatever. Even to this year, you know, we're having, you know, films that, you know, that are breaking with us, our opening night, you know, Princess of the Row, Jeff Aruco that's breaking his film at the festival. Then you have artists that come to the festival, you know, you have Fast and Furious, you know, break a film, you know, premiere at the festival. That's where you kind of get more studios to really start looking at you. And it's like, okay, well, now that's not a platform to premiere this work. Now you're going to look at this stuff too while you're at it.
Right.
And that's how you build that credibility as a, hopefully as a viable pipeline. So for us, that's where we start. We kind of fight hard, you know, to get those premieres and, you know, not just New York premieres, but those world premieres and, you know, really start growing that studio support.
What are the major lessons that you've learned that you take today and you go, man, if I had to do this all over again, this is how I would start it out?
You can't change a damn thing.
Really? You wouldn't change
you can't
anything?
Change it. No, because I believe, you know, I really believe God puts it into plan, the good and the bad. You learn from it and you move. And I think, and you just got to move in it and through it. So I wouldn't change anything. I learned a lot. I mean, this was not in the cards. I never expected this. I was 21, like living in my mom's house, going to college. Like this was not, I never studied to do this. Like, you know, I had lofty goals, but then once, you know, people started reacting to it, I really had to just prepare for it. And all of this happened, you know, organically. So no, I can't change anything.
Out of everything that everybody could expect to go see, what are some of the key films or key events that everyone should try and get a ticket as soon as possible?
I think the opening night, Princess in the Row, is brilliant. And so you want to talk about an evolution of stories. You know, this is a film that, you know, is about this African American, this girl and her father. Her father suffers for PTSD syndrome, and they're living on the streets of Skid Row. And a Latino family kind of takes them in, but she wants to live with her father. And so she's conflicted between stability and being with a father that can snap at any given moment.
Some people that see me, they might think my life's dirt. but I always thought of my life like a fairy tale story.
But again, this is to your point, like earlier, this is one of those stories. You look at the film, you look at the trailer, and you would think, you would assume a Latino didn't direct it.
Right.
Latino directed it.
What is the association there, by the way? What does a Latino movie look like done by a Latino? And what does one like Princess of Rose supposed to look like? What ethnicity is that supposed to look like?
You know what? I mean, she's the ethnicity that she is. So the girl is black and the family is Latin. I think, you know, like, again, I mean, you have a director that he just wants to make movies. And
right.
That's we should support that too. I think that's the point. You know, how you see people changing now is like, okay, I need to make what's commercially viable and still stay somewhat culturally relevant. And I think that's what you have with this film. You know, it's entertaining. It's great. It has the culture, but it's also, you know, a moving story. And I think that is what you're going to see again change. It's like, yeah, filmmakers that are kind of just wising up. Okay, well, I can be cultural without necessarily alienating. You know, how do I make a culturally relevant story and still be broadly entertaining?
The I Like It Like That cast is getting together after, man, what, like 20 some odd years?
25 years. Yeah.
Welcome to the Bronx. For Lisette, it's a crazy place to raise a family. A hard place to hold on to your man.
You see this ring? You know what that makes me? His wife. You know what that makes you? His home.
Man, how did you guys get all these guys together?
It's hard. We haven't even finished doing it yet. It's hard. It's hard. I'm not going to lie. And this was an idea because, you know, I had seen an article with, I was reading something about Tupac. It was about hip hop. And Tupac went to the New York premiere of the film. And I was like, oh, shoot, Tupac came. And I was looked up. And it had it on the marquee, and he was walking past the marquee. And I said, well, when did this come out? It came out 25 years ago. And then I put in a poll to Sony and the Motion Picture Association. I said, well, this could be interesting. And then I did this research on Darnell and what it took her to make the film. And, you know, as you know, she's the first African-American woman, you know, to have a studio film finance and distributed.
Yeah.
And the fact that she did this. So you want to talk about Latino, Latinx, she makes this movie. And not only is it about the Puerto Rican experience, but it gets into Afro-Latinos. It gets into transgender. It gets into Me Too. It gets into, you know, machismoism. She covers all of this. If you really look at the film, all of this in a dramedy. She did 25 years ago. And some 25 years ago, some people thought, oh, you know, some people are like, oh, this is stereotypical, or they didn't, you know, we don't like this, or they don't like that. And everything that she brought up then is what we're talking about now.
I always felt like it was the Latino Spike Lee movie, you know?
Yeah.
It had so much of that influence in there, you know, New York, and that urban vibe that you don't really get from a lot of New York movies. You either get the Scorsese movie or the Woody Allen movie, but you didn't have that in between. And Spike Lee and Darnell obviously did that. Griffin Dunn is in the movie, by the way, guys. I'm not sure if you've seen it or not. Classic New York film. Like, this is perfect for the New York Film Festival, New York Latino Film Festival. Griffin Dunn is in it. Jesse Borrego, John Seda, Lauren Velez, who's hot right now. She just finished doing Spider-Verse, voiced that.
Yeah.
I forgot she was in something else recently too that was pretty big.
And we've done these before. We did a reunion of the Fania All-Stars 1 year, the living one. So we managed to get a 4K remaster of our Latin thing, and everyone who was living, you know, got to come and see it. And so, you know, that was great because they never saw the film in like Dolby Digital, you know, when you're hearing this, you know, in a crystal clear.
Yeah, I saw the movie on a DVD. I never saw the movie in the theaters.
We had a 4K.
So, Calixto, man, congratulations on everything for this year. Sounds like it's another exciting year for the New York Latino Film Festival.
Thank you so much.
Got the Futuro Conference. I'll be moderating the keynote with Benjamin Odell, who is an executive producer and a screenwriter for Tripas, along with Eugenio Derbez. And the lineup looks great. You guys have the Latinos Out Loud podcast, The Last Day, So it seems like another amazing year. Are there any parting thoughts you want to leave with the ticket buyers before they get their tickets?
No, please support, network, build. We've seen so many amazing collaborations come from the festival. So many people, you know, networking is power in numbers. There's power in numbers when we're not only in the theaters, but when we're together in the same room and the ideas that manifest from that. So whether you're at Futuro, whether you're, you know, in the films or even attending one of our industry panels, you know, by all means, like whether you have money or not, there's opportunity to attend this festival. And so, you know, we definitely want everybody to experience it. Because I believe when you see a film at the festival, it's not like going to any movie theater. I think we're in a room of us, just the energy is just different. And I've witnessed it. And so I think once other people experience that, you know, they'll come back. And it's like family. It's like summer camp. It's crazy. Especially with the diehard fans. It really feels kind of like summer camp. So, yeah, definitely come and experience it.
The New York Latino Film Festival begins August 12th through the 18th. Good talking to you, Calixto.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And before Mike and I go to our first reaction of Dora, here are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend. Departamento, Banda Los Chinos featuring Adán Jodorowsky.
Ya no recuerda esa noche.
Si te miro, siempre olvido cómo caminar.
Valeria, de Vicio.
Respirar en suspiro.
Un día de estos, mientras te beso, linda vaya.
Parar el tiempo, Sima Funk.
If you think you know Dora.
Delicioso!
Can you say delicioso?
She'll grow out of it.
We are at the AMC Lincoln Center on 68th and Broadway, where most of the big screenings for major movie studios are taking place. I'm here joined with Mike Sargent, film and culture critic, and a great friend of the show. And Mike, we're just finished watching Dora the Explorer, and I'm glad you're here to talk about a little bit about this. We're watching the credits roll as we do this first reaction, and I love that Bomba Estéreo from Colombia, one of my favorite bands, is playing as the credits are rolling as we finish seeing Dora the Explorer. Initial thoughts?
Well, first of all, you know, I love the concept of Dora the Explorer, what it was all about, what it is for kids and everything. So contextually, I love the fact that Dora exists.
Right.
I think it's very smart what they did. Make her a little bit older, make her appeal to kids who still watch her, but also kids who used to watch her.
Right, right.
And I think that Isabella Moner is going to be a
star.
Huge star. She's always the best thing in anything she does. And she's completely watchable, completely enjoyable. She totally carries the film.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen her in Transformers. I think it was her big debut. She's been in Instant Family with Mark Wahlberg.
Twice with Mark Wahlberg.
She was in that Sicario movie with Benicio del Toro. And now she's carrying a major motion picture production by Paramount Studios. And one of the things about this film in particular is we have another Latino family. Much like ABC has Grand Hotel on primetime now in the summer, I think America is more accepting of what a Latino family that's not necessarily a gang members or poor living in the projects. What I like about Dora is that it comes from Nickelodeon, from the Viacom industry, from the Viacom properties. And Paramount Pictures is using a lot of that to be able to attract this as a family film.
Yes, and they also, there's a new division that I think this film is launching, Paramount Players. Which is an interesting thing. And this is Walden Media. You know, I like the idea, everything you said. It's educational. It's you know, you said something key about, you know, Latino family. And part of what I love about Dora is it's representation. Like, we see this represented. It's represented on screen.
Right.
You know, family's important. It's an underlying theme.
Friendship.
You know? Friendship. I mean, you know, it's a kid's movie, but there's no way you can't sit there and not smile when things are happening.
Right, and we also got to make sure that this isn't meant for adults to go watch by themselves or anything. Well, I mean, that would be a little weird.
It'd be for the child in you, okay?
Oh, yeah, I grew up with Dora the Explorer. Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, sure you did.
So, essentially, I mean, this is an important film for me because it puts brown-skinned actors, brown-skinned family, on the forefront of what mainstream media is. I mean, it doesn't get bigger than Hollywood, doesn't get bigger than a Paramount Pictures film.
And this is a huge IP, okay?
This is a huge IP. It's been very successful on the cartoon level with kids. And I think that one of the things that Paramount wants to do here is cross that over on a bigger scale, right? Merchandising is, I think, one of the things that we're going to see out of this film. Dolls, maybe even a little concert tour with Dora and the band. Who knows?
There's a lot they could do with it. But, you know, what you said is important. I think it's an important film. It, you know, getting away from the importance, it's enjoyable. It's fun. And I really enjoyed seeing all those Latino performers, Michael Peña and
Eva Longoria.
Eva Longoria
and Eugenio Derbez.
Eugenio Derbez, who I know you've interviewed here on the show. It was great just to see them all working together, and I enjoyed seeing in the credits so many Latino names, the director of photography and, you know, the producer and this person behind the scenes. So that's fun, too, because at this point, you know, there's a lot of stories to tell. And
there are.
We need to be part of them. You
right.
Know? And there just needs to. I enjoyed that all the characters were people of color, almost.
Right. So the crew, the Dora and her friends, it was also something you had either an Indian or Middle Eastern woman, girl,
right,
actress.
Right, right, right.
You had a Latino kid in Diego.
Right.
You had a white kid in the comic relief of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously you had Dora, the family. And I feel, I'm not going to say this was a perfect movie in any way, that this is the next Black Panther. This is not the next Black Panther. This is not the next Crazy Rich Asians. Can this make it to number one at the box office? I do think so. And here's why. It's a family film with a known popular global recognized IP in Dora the Explorer.
Absolutely.
It's going to bring in a lot of parents, and it's like white parents, black parents. We saw it here today. A lot of white kids, black kids were laughing at Latino gags. At,
sure.
We saw a lot of the inside references that kids will get, the kids reacted to. Kids loved it from what I was listening and watching here.
And the other thing that's also interesting, yes, is definitely Latino death is definitely brown, but it's also girl power.
That's right.
It does not depend on the boys to save her. She's the one saving everybody. And I think that's a significant message. And I think that's part of what has made Dora so popular. You know, little girls need heroes just as much as little boys do.
Right, right. So that's pretty. I mean, you have a little girl.
A little girl. She loved Dora the Explorer when she was little. So I totally.
Would she be totally into watching this movie and liking it?
I would love to hear what her thoughts are. I think she would enjoy it, of course, because again, Dora's 16 in the movie. And that's that age where you're not a little girl anymore, but you're not, you know, Dora's not interested in boys, but we know that's coming, you know?
Right.
So it's really, but it's an element with other characters.
Right, right.
So I really, again, like you said, it's not a perfect movie, but it's an adventure. It's like Indiana Jones. Like there are lots of adventures.
Indiana Jones with a 15-year-old, you know, Latina female lead.
That's right.
Is what you can expect. It's an action adventure that really picks up almost halfway through the film is when the movie kind of starts getting its legs.
Yeah.
The first half, you know, it's a little boring, not really interesting. You're not really laughing at many of the jokes. And then the pace really picks up. And if you give it a chance, I think that's when you probably get a bang for your buck through here.
I agree. I think the humor probably is the weakest part of the film.
Yeah. But remember, it's a PG humor, so it's not really meant for adults to be laughing at. It's kids we're laughing at the stupidest little things that were, you know, kind of dumb, but they loved it.
That's it. And you're right. And that's kind of the fun thing. We saw it with the target audience.
Right.
Which is a lot of kids.
Yeah, that's right.
And the kids enjoyed it. And that's really what, you know, again, like you said, it's a family film. It's a film that you'll enjoy, you know, and it's going to have a long life on
DVD and cable.
It's kind of movie. Yeah. You can go away, come back. Oh, something else is happening. Oh, something else is happening. Oh, you know, so there's a lot of that. And it's fun. You know,
On some parting words in my particular view of the film, some things I would like to see a little bit better.
Okay.
What we didn't see was the fact that the director wasn't Hispanic here. I don't know how much. I mean, you're a filmmaker. I want to see more power, more executive authority on the back end, not necessarily. We have to begin somewhere. So I am okay with finally seeing a platform where Americans of all ethnicities, of all skin colors, can watch a Latino family, a Latino story, mixed in with a context of mainstream scenarios like an action adventure, right? That anybody could totally get into. And that's great. We can start on screen, but off camera, where the true power is to greenlight a lot of these projects, we need to see more of that. And I didn't see enough there, but maybe it would have impacted it. Maybe it would have impacted it and would have probably even been a better film. Do you think that this movie will get a sequel?
I definitely think that this movie could get a sequel, and they'd have to do it quickly because, you know, she's going to age out in a certain amount of time. But I also think, you know, something you mentioned here that I wanted to touch upon, you talk about parting shots. The other thing about a movie and you're engrossed in the world, and, you know, it's clearly a fantasy world because there are a lot of fantasy elements in Dora. But, you know, I like that some parts are in Spanish.
Some
parts aren't, and it wasn't that forced, like they just throw it in. It felt a little more natural as to when, you know, you're going to talk in Spanish when you're saying something personal, something that you can only express in your native language. I enjoyed that, but also the culture, you know. On some levels, it made fun of itself and make fun of food and things, and there's some silly humor. But on the other level, just accepting, you know, sort of like what Cosby Show did, just accepting.
Normalizing.
Like, normalizing a Latino family, especially in the wake of
El Paso
and what some people, how some people would prefer to view Latinos in America. Yeah. I think it's important. I think, again, representation, to see it, to feel it, to enjoy it, to laugh, to be able to bring your little girl, a little boy to see this movie. And they enjoy it, and they don't have to have any of the bias the rest of some of these crazy people
do. You know, I grew up in an era where I always thought in my head that a white kid, a white person, would fear seeing a brown skin on screen. Like, he would be like, oh, I don't want to see that and walk out. That they would reject it. And therefore rejecting me in the process. Because if you can't accept it on screen, then why would you accept it in your life? And that is what I went through. So here, already in my 40s, to watch this and to see little white kids and little black kids laugh with it and go, oh my God, this is so funny. That to me was ultimately the triumph here.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. And I definitely know how significant it is to not see yourself on screen, to not see yourself marketed, to not see yourself, you know, heroes that look like you.
Right.
And I think it's important for people of color and definitely for women, because, you know, there are plenty of male heroes out there.
Yeah.
You know,
and
females, and a young female hero. And I love the fish out of water element of this, too.
Yeah.
It made it fun. It's like it embraces who Dora is. But, okay, what if you put Dora around normal people?
Right.
How would they treat Dora? And that's a fun fun conceit, I thought, in the film. And I also think, you know, again, it's pleasant, you know. May not be the best film. Definitely you don't feel – it didn't get stupid.
Right, right.
And that says a lot for a kid's film.
Right. So this is not – Black Panther, it's not Crazy Rich Asians, but it's a start. And I think it's a start in the right direction. We need a franchise, we need several franchises. And this is the beginning, you know. Hopefully, I have a feeling that this movie might might be number one, number two, and Paramount has to really make a decision if being a number two is good enough. Because if it's good enough and they greenlit a second part, now we have a franchise. Now we're talking that this could have legs, and it would be the first one that we have as a culture, I mean, probably ever. Or, well, they had Spy Kids. That was a franchise. But that never had the scale of, you know, being a Paramount mainstream picture.
No. And again, I'm glad Spy Kids happened when it did. But like what you're asking, did it change things? No, it didn't change things. Dora has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And Dora is a property that...
And it's a crossover property.
It's a crossover property. And it hasn't really been exploited in live action, you know. You know, in an age where Disney's planning to reboot everything they've ever done, okay? You know, I'm just reading today, they're going to remake Home Alone.
I know.
For the new channel. All these things. You know, it's fun to see something that hasn't been taken live action, take it live action and do something with it, especially for people of color.
So from the AMC theaters on 68th and Broadway, Mike Sargent, Jack Rico, first reaction. And that's it for episode 121 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I want to thank Calixto and Mike for hopping on the show. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please spread the love on social media and tell all your friends about it. You can reach me on Instagram at Jack Rico and on my Facebook page at JackRico40. Remember, it's only through your support that our show can grow. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.